How to do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, January 14th. This is 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
Glad to have you with me. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
What? Oh my God, it's so exciting to be here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I had invited Brian Chaffin, not Tiffany. But, you know, whatever. It's cool.
Okay, Heather.
Okay. So it's going to be that kind of show, kids. Buckle up. First, we're going to start with a PSA about a battery replacement program from Apple. They do these occasionally. And Andrew, you wrote this up for us this morning.
Yeah, so Apple is starting a replacement program for battery cases, but it's only certain ones. So the cases are for the iPhone XS, XS Max, and iPhone XR. Now, these have to be sold between January and October 2019. So some of the problems that Apple mentioned people have reported are intermittent charging, the case failing to charge when it's plugged into the wall, and also the case itself failing to charge the iPhone. Okay. So if you've noticed any of these problems and you have any of these cases, Apple has a support page where you can sign up to get it fixed.
You know, I read the headline and then it didn't actually click through the story originally, Andrew, so I'm glad you explained it, because I had originally just assumed it was because they were ugly and feel really weird on your phone.
Yeah, maybe that's just me. We finally listened to customer feedback and the pink one looks like your phone has a giant Band-Aid. So we're going to fix that. So I am glad to hear this only because I know a couple of people who have had battery case issues. So I'm hoping that they are people who are covered under this so that it gets resolved. Basically it was just a PSA. So if you have one of these battery cases, you can check out the replacement program and maybe there will be something that can be worked out on that for you, which would be great. Now, Andrew, you also wrote up another thing today, which I have to say, the way that you phrased it really entertained me this morning, and that was Apple brings Reality Converter AR app to macOS. Mostly because Apple has a long and storied history with distorting reality, and so to me this was kind of funny to read. Tell us more about it, though.
Yeah, don't distort reality. Now we're converting it.
Okay.
But basically,
so that's an upgrade, right? Like we used to just distort it, and now we're just converting. Okay.
Yep. Now, I don't remember which year Apple announced this, but when they started to kind of get deeper into augmented reality, they announced this special file format called USDZ. I'm not sure what that stands for. But, for example, if you visited the Apple website when they released the new Mac Pro, there's this AR window that you could tap on, and then it would present that the Mac Pro in real life, like on your desk or whatever, so you can look at it, zoom in, get a size for, you know, maybe how big it is. Now, that is a USDZ file. And this app called Reality Converter, there's also an iOS app called Reality Composer, basically lets developers work with these types of files for their own websites.
Okay. Or if you're Kelly, you put the Mac Pro in front of the Tillamook Dairy Visitor Center and next to blocks of Tillamook cheese, because cheese and apples go together really well, and I thought it was funny. Yeah, I do remember using that. So this is that app. And it's a beta. Mm-hmm. So this is, all the kind of stuff that goes into using beta software. I guess we should probably talk about that a little bit. I don't do a lot of stuff with AR files aside from put Mac Pros in ridiculous places. So working with the files themselves is not, I'm not going to probably spend any time in this app, I'm going to say. Brian, how about you?
It's aimed at developers, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I quickly looked. USD is apparently the file format. USDZ would be then a zipped version of that file. At least that's what I'm looking at. And it's also a Pixar invention.
Oh, nice.
All right.
Yeah, I could be wrong about the thing on the zip drive, but a USDZ package is a zip archive for sure, and it seems like the file format is actually called USD.
Okay.
Which is cool. And actually, what I can't figure out, though, is exactly what it stands for.
Yeah. But it's a converter, so... Yeah, Apple says there are other 3D file formats like OBJ, GLTF, and then .USD. So you drag and drop one of those in, and then it will convert it to USDZ.
Okay.
All right, well, this should hopefully help developers, and it's going to be on the Mac, which is good because that is where most development for Apple devices is done.
You don't say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I still think that, augmented reality is going to be a society and probably life-changing invention once we, or technology, I should say, once we have some sort of glasses that will give us information without having to walk around with our phones held in front of our face.
That's a similar assessment to what Dave said when we did the show yesterday, specifically talking about how some of this stuff isn't going to matter. Like, we were talking about cable modems, and he said, you know, before everybody had broadband, like, we had video conferencing that you could do, but it sucked. And we all wanted video conferencing, and so, you know, internet speeds got better and video conferencing got better. So once we have that, I think AR needs that same sort of thing. Once everybody has some sort of thing that AR would make better, that's not just, you know, Pokemon, then that's when more people are going to pay attention, and we're going to get more practical, boring applications for that kind of stuff. So I think it's just a matter of finding where it fits now. And then, you know, society, like you said, Brian, is going to eventually, you know, evolve to include that. I think that'll make the difference.
It's going to be a rapid, rapid change. It's going to be one of those things where, like, 3 years later, we're like, oh, my God, how did we live without this beforehand? and I mean, you know, smartphones are an excellent example of that. How do we live our lives without smartphones? But turns out we did that for quite a while, but now it's just like, can you know, any of the three of us imagine not having an iPhone?
I can. It's just not fun.
Yeah.
Because I did it for a long time. Even after the iPhone came out, I still didn't, like, I didn't have an original iPhone. So, yeah, I know what it's like. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't all that long ago. I just don't want to do it.
We need glasses, and then contacts, and then, you know, of course, eventually some sort of implant in our brain that doesn't actually need an actual display, but we need something. Like, you know, it turns out that most of our seeing is done with our eyeballs.
Again, Brian, breaking news here on Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast.
We need those glasses that actually work.
Yeah. I think getting to that point is going to be, it's going to be interesting to watch. And then when we get there, I think it'll really be fun to try out eventually. It's going to take a lot of convincing for me to wear glasses again. I paid a non-zero amount of money to stop. And so doing it again is going to have to be a really convincing case.
Well, but you'd be wearing displays.
Yeah, but still.
Not glasses.
Well, it's another reason, but it's the same reason I don't like going to, you know, 3D movies. It's like, I paid a bunch of money not to wear glasses anymore. I don't want to put them on here. So, yeah.
Cry me a river.
Yeah, see, it's hashtag nerd world problems. That's what I'm saying. which is when your first world problems are first world problems. Yeah, nerd world problems. That's what I'm telling you. So the other thing we wanted to talk about today, you know, since this is the trend for today's show, Andrew, you wrote up a piece about scams and what you can do to avoid them.
Yeah, so I was linking to an article over on Lifehacker, and I know me and you, Kelly, have talked about these before,
yes.
But I don't remember if I've actually written them all down in my own guide. So here we go.
All right.
But yeah, they're basically things like, you know, if you get an email from your bank, don't click on it. Like if it tells you, hey, there's something wrong with your account, click here. Ignore that link and just go straight to the bank's website and log in there.
The way you
and,
normally you know, do, sure like if you have a bookmark or something, like go log into the bank sort of by hand instead of using a link in an email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, make sure it says HTTPS and there's like a little padlock icon in the address bar. Mm-hmm.
Another thing I would say to double check is that you are at the right domain. Because, like, if you bank at Wells Fargo, somebody may have put together, like, loanwellsfargo.com, which mm-hmm. looks right, you know, because they use loan.wellsfargo.com. But if you're not at wellsfargo.com, then this is a scammy website. You will see this sometimes in email addresses, too, if you see the from on a sketchy-looking email. It'll be like... like a bunch of random characters, iTunes at something, 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 apple.com, you know, so that it yeah. looks like maybe it's correct, but it's really not correct. So keep a close eye on the address bar where you have it available to see.
Yeah. And then also building on that, like make sure the address is also spelled correctly and not just the address, the rest of the email too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially with scam emails, I know I've gotten this one. I think, Brian, you might have too. I think we talked about briefly at one point. Your Apple Music renewal that turns out yeah. to be fake.
Yeah.
That one looked really good because when I got it, I went, wait, now is not when my Apple Music renews. And I was sort of worried about it. And
yeah. I've seen lots that look really good, and you know what? A really basic thing you can do, like if you get a notification from your bank, you don't mm-hmm. have to click the link from the bank from the email. You could just like go to your bank's website and type it in by hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and doing things like that, you could do the same thing with Apple.
Yeah.
Same thing with any company is you don't necessarily have to click the link. I mean, I always check if I'm going to click a link in an email, I always hover over mm-hmm. that link first to make sure the URL I'm actually being sent to matches what I expect.
Yeah. That's also important because like, yeah, if it says it's, you know, if they're using the same scammy URL for everything, maybe it looks like an Apple Music renewal. And they want you to click on a link, but you look at the link and it says Spotify. Like, yeah, that's shady. You should maybe not click that. what else do you got for Sandy?
Well, go ahead, Brian. It says, like, you know, you're supposed to be an Amazon link, but it's at EADZ45.com.
Yeah.
That's a much better example than someone's, you know, trying to trick you into going to Spotify one by saying Apple Music. But anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like you can always hover over, like if you're on your computer, you can hover the cursor over that click here or that link or whatever and take a look and see where it says it's going to actually send you. And it should check out. And if it doesn't, don't click it. And if there is an error at your bank or the bank needs you for something and they send you a notification, you can go if you go to the bank and log in, you should see it there. And if it's not there, then there's probably something else going on.
And yeah, and be on the lookout too for like, you know, amazon.eadz94.com.
Yeah.
Right? You want to be going to amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
Not amazon.someotherdomain.com.
Right. Because that's another one too that will happen. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've seen it plenty of times.
Oh, me too. Yeah. What else you got for us, Andrew?
The next two things are ones we have definitely talked about on the show, us three. Use strong passwords and secret questions, and also don't give out your passwords.
Yes. Now,
most of our focus has been on the passwords, but with the secret questions, you know, if you get a security question with the website, it usually gives you a drop-down menu where you can pick your own from pre-selected ones, like what was your mother's maiden name? Well, don't tell the truth. If someone knows you, they can easily guess what it is, or even if they don't know you, they could probably look that information up. So generate a password for each secret question as well.
Yeah. That's a thing that I think doesn't occur to people a lot of times is when you sign up for whatever and you fill in your security question and, you know, you say my mother's maiden name is EAZD4.amazon.com, to use Brian's point. They're not going to call you and say, yeah, we know that's not her name. You need to change it to the right thing. No one's going to verify the information that you put here. So you can say the first car you drove was, you know, 40 characters of gibberish, and nobody's going to call you up and go, look, we know it was a Tercel. You're not fooling anyone. You need to fix your answer. Like, that's not going to happen. The whole point is for this to be something easy for you to remember. And even better is if you don't have to remember it at all. So you can... most password managers have a spot for security question stuff, or if nothing else, they have a note section. So you can put in the note section, this is what I do with all mine, like security questions, I picked this and here's the answer. I picked this, here's the answer. And then that way, if I ever do need to reset it, I do have all that information in my password manager if something happens and I need to change it and they want me to verify my identity by answering a question or something. At least I have that data in front of me and easy to retrieve.
I love doing this because it makes me mad when I see it. So I like making my answers things like, I hate you for effing even asking me this question. and then I'll do exactly what Kelly says. I'll put what the question is. And then, you know, usually actually I type it out in the password manager. Mm-hmm. Right. Each one is always different. I don't ever repeat anything, you know, that's super important. You know, you don't want to repeat the same answers in the same way. You don't want to reuse a password anywhere. Right. It's the same thing.
So the school Brian attended as a child was you're bad and you should feel bad is what I'm saying.
I hate you for even asking me this question.
Yes.
With some profanity thrown in too.
Oh yeah. I just didn't want to add that because I don't want to have to edit later. So, also, for people playing along at home, Brian's mother's maiden name is delete your account. Choose the swearing that goes in the middle. I'm interested in this partly because, like, I think I had both of you here when we talked about it being the year of security and talking about how this is there's a good way to upgrade some of this stuff. The two things I tell people most are the one I already told all of you, which is nobody verifies the data that you put in for those secret questions. So nobody's going to come back to you and say, we know that's not your school or your car, or your candy or whatever. And the other one is, if somebody walked up to you and said that to you in person, would you believe them? And there used to be a PSA that I saw once in a while on TV where there was a guy like standing in a coffee shop and he would walk up to people and say, I have $1 million, you know, I have $5 million in a bank account. And if you let me transfer it to you, I will give you $1 million of those dollars. And everybody in the coffee shop looked at this dude like he was insane and they all walked away. And then at the end it said like, if you wouldn't believe it in real life, why would you believe it in your inbox or something like that? And I was like, yeah, that's a really good measure because in person, if somebody said that to you out loud, like you absolutely wouldn't believe it. So that's the other one I like to point out to people, particularly because some of this stuff is not necessarily like it's an online scam, but the attack vector is a little different. So I know we've talked about, you get a phone call that your computer has a virus and the person on the phone with the very heavy accent is the only person who can save you if you will just give them your credit card number and access to your machine. because it's happened to a number of people that I know. And partly they're just confused. Like, this is one nice thing about not being very technically savvy is that the people I know who have done this have just been confused, like, and continued asking questions. But how do you know this? Like, my computer's not on right now. how can you tell me you're seeing problems? And just sort of like didn't understand that it was a scam at that point. So they understand now. They're far more aware. Everyone's been educated. It's fine. But yeah, it's a thing that can be a little weird. You know, particularly if you say it out loud. I do have a couple of friends who like to sort of keep those folks on the line as long as possible for sport. because as long as you're talking to me and I know that you're fake, you're not talking to somebody who may not know. And so I'm sort of saving that next person from whatever it is you're trying to do. So
yeah, I read this article a long time ago. I don't remember the website, but basically it was a reporter who got the scam and he played along with them and he let them remote access into a special virtual machine that he set up.
Oh my gosh.
It was really funny. I'm going to see if I'm going to find this after the show.
That sounds delightful. I definitely want to read that. I will also make sure there's a bonus link in the show notes. For there's a fella, James Veitch, who gave a TED talk about a scammer who wrote about, I think it was like, I will FedEx you gold bars or something if you give me a bunch of money. And he starts like trying to make friends with the scammer, and it's hilarious to watch. So I will make sure that that gets in the show notes as well. It's just this, you know, 5-minute talk or whatever it is that TED talks are. And he's like, yeah. And all of his slides are just email correspondence. So he's like, well, here's what he said. So how could I reply anyway but this? You know, it's pretty entertaining. Yeah. So I think that's probably going to do it for us. Unless, Brian, do you have a pro scam avoidance tip?
If it's too good to be true, it's probably not true.
There's an excellent chance it's not true. Yeah.
There's an excellent chance that it's not true. Yeah. And please, 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 please make your passwords long, complex, and unique.
Yes.
That's not avoiding a scam, but.
But it helps a lot. Pretty please.
It does. Yeah. And help the people who turn to you for advice, which.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A whole lot of people hearing this have friends and family who look to them for tech guidance.
Yes. Lead by example. That's a good one. Yeah, definitely. And part of that is, you know, maybe you sign up for a family plan on the password manager that you use, or you make sure that other people are set up with some sort of password management. Again, we've talked about this before. If you're listening to this show, you probably have an Apple device, and that means you have iCloud Keychain, which will do this for you. It's very easy. And at a minimum, you can make sure that everything in iCloud Keychain is different and unique on all your websites. And all you need for that, particularly if you're on iOS, is you need your thumb or you need Face ID, you know, whatever it is that you use to unlock your phone. That also will work really well. It's pretty great. Mm-hmm. That's going to do it for us today. I want to thank all of you, both of you, for being here today. I want to thank all of you for listening. If you have more tips that we should be sharing for people who want to avoid scams, you can email us at observations@macobserver.com. which each of us checks with a unique password. You can also chat with us at TMO Daily on Twitter or leave comments in the show notes. Thank you, Brian, for being here today.
Thanks for having us, Kelly.
And Andrew, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.